Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, this is Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. Another Monday evening, and Edwin is back for another rant. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin. I'm glad to see you. I thought maybe the FBI went knocking at your door as well and wanted to get backdoor access to all your data. And
well, yeah, it's quite concerning. More than 1,000 people have now been locked up following the recent riots and things in the UK. Well, riots in inverted commas, frankly. Some of those, of course, just doing social media stuff. So it is quite concerning. But I suppose if you were using some of those messenger apps, then you might be concerned too.
Yeah, well, this is what I was worried about you, Martin. You know, you got some valuable data there. What's going on in the households in Australia, and with all the work that you also have been doing there over in with that that company there that you've been working with mirror what you were doing here in Australia to the landscape there, and getting some data that live data, as I call it. As opposed to data that lags, and you're able to, we're able to bring to our followers and our viewers, and your followers and viewers, that at grassroots level, and not only is it informative, but it's also not lagging. There are many websites, and I know you had one of those funny websites on your show during the week as well. And I don't think you liked the fact that I brought up the question about where does he obtain his information, and how far is the lag? I'm still not convinced by what he said, and I still don't think that scraping other websites is fundamentally giving you the right picture. If it is just scraping the websites, it's in my opinion, is you're lagging, no different to what CoreLogic and all the other purporters of so-called information are putting out, which is really the 6 weeks delay in the settlement, and then by the time he registers with the Lands and Titles office. So at best case scenario, you're 72 days behind.
Well, that's a very important point, Edwin, and you and I have been talking about this for a long, long time. And unfortunately, the property portals generally are actually getting less and less useful in terms of the information that they aren't providing. For example, a lot of sale prices are never actually reported on the publicly available portals. And as you say, there's this massive lag between what may happen with regard to an auction and what actually happens when the settlement comes through, and the settlement is actually then locked in. Quite often prices get changed afterwards and all sorts of things, and that isn't reflected. So it is very important to understand that a lot of the information that's out there in mainstream media land and in mainstream property portal land is frankly deceptive. And that's why I guess this rant's pretty important, because what we try to do is to bring to our viewers and followers a little bit more of a sense of what's really going on. And, we've been talking about for some time the pressure on households. And we, for example, saw this article this week that says that half of the state's frontline workers are taking on or considering a second job. That's findings from a Unions New South Wales survey of more than 7,000 union and non-public sector employees. And that's a really important point, because many people, of course, are really struggling at the moment with all sorts of pressures. Another one, of course, that came up and was reported, we've been talking about this already, insurance costs are going through the roof, and many people are now underinsured or not insured, which, of course, leads to big issues. Insurance costs have been leading the inflation charge and are still much higher than previously. And then the other one that's worth reflecting on is the auction clearance rates. The mainstream media reported that CoreLogic said 71.4% of clearances. But of course, I know that those clearance rates are pretty Mickey Mouse. And as one person on Twitter said, Can you believe the lies in the mainstream media? The real clearance rates are only 42%. Only SQM's data is credible. I think that's probably true. And in fact, I made a show on that yesterday. Is property springing into life or catching a cold? And I guess the critical issue, Edwin, is that, where you get your information from is pretty important, right? Because if you're actually going to swallow the mainstream waffle, then you're going to be misled about what's going on in and around the property market. And as with all of these things, what's actually going on and what is being reported often is not necessarily completely the same. And here's a good example. This was actually an article that came out, said cheaper than a decade ago. And this is actually just some areas where, in fact, prices, average prices in and around areas of Sydney, for example, are cheaper than a decade ago. What? You say that can't possibly be true. Now, sometimes it's because of a change in the mix of properties relative to a year 10 years ago, like at Box Hill. But when they're talking about Parramatta units, that's true, I think, because of supply demand. So as with always, we come back to our fundamental point, which is you have to go granular, you have to look at the local markets, and don't be misled.
Yeah, look, and the interesting thing about some of the articles that you brought up there, Martin, in particular the one with the with regards to the frontline workers, it really hits home because you find that the frontline workers, the first responders, they're an essential workforce, and they're already doing long shifts. And they're doing long shifts. It's not, in some aspects, it's grueling. It can be heavy, but in other aspects, it's demanding. In the sense of you have to be on your wits. You have to be on sharp and alert, and forcing frontline workers into a second job. For me, it sends alarm bells ringing because of the after effects. And I don't know, like I've been around people that have done double shifts, and it's not pretty after the second day. And I mean, they've got to make life-changing decisions. I mean, life-shaping decisions. In some cases, when you're in the hospitals and in other medical facilities, so it's shameful where we've how low we've gone down in terms of our standard of living, and the politicians don't. It's almost like they just don't seem to care, and the news that have been brought out. It's almost like, well, so what? Water off a duck's back. So to speak, and it just does. It's we've just been so desensitized, and on that point of being desensitized, I mean, there was that article on Yahoo News about the Pension and Defence offering camping tent in the backyard for $125 a week. I mean, he believes he's doing his bit by offering a space in his backyard, but this is what we've come. This is what it's all come down to. We get the thrill of the auction clearance rates. We talk about the hooray of the of auctions going 10, 15, 20%, 500, 1 million, 2 million above reserve, and all these hooray stories, all these, but this is reality. This is it. We see the minces and the elbows and the whoevers. Beating their chests when they build 14 townhouses, but yet in the meantime, there's a national crisis, housing crisis, where we were building 230,000 on average, 230, 260,000 dwellings, not houses, but dwellings on an annual basis. That's gone down to although they say 160,000, in reality. This year, it's according to HIA and our insiders in HIA, it's really only going to be around 95, and potentially it's going to get worse next year. Because why? Because we don't have the builders, we don't have the teams, we don't have the right infrastructure or the right support teams, but we do have a lot of committees, Martin. We do have a lot of committees. We do have a lot of a lot of money is spent on think tanks. Millions is spent on think tanks, and even then they get the budgets wrong. I mean, it's crazy stuff. And this is where you and I and our followers, our viewers, we look at beyond the mainstream media. We look at beyond the reporting, and we avail ourselves with and equip ourselves with deeper information and information from, you could say, from the horse's mouth and from other sources. And we're able to form the opinion that at the end of the day, we're in deep gaca, and it's not going to get any better soon, unfortunately. We've got to brace ourselves for the next 3 to 5 years at least.
No, I think you're right. And it was interesting. I don't know whether you saw Christopher Joy's most recent article, but it was actually quite interesting insofar that he talked about the bubbling up of home prices and making the point we've been making, and of course, the Victoria's never-ending taxation appears to be precipitating an exodus of people and capital to more economic favorable destinations. Yeah, well, we've been speaking about that. And he's basically talking about what the RBA is doing and needs to do. And they've sort of introduced forward guidance. It didn't work last time, but why would it work this time? Which is quite interesting. But I actually think the most important headline over the last week was this one, Edwin, that China has suspended steel plant approvals. Beijing has abruptly suspended its system for approving new steel plants as the government responds to a deep demand slump that has crushed industry profits and fueled a surge in exports. And they say that the world's second largest economy has grappled with weak consumer demand and the prolonged property slowdown, prompting greater intervention from policymakers in recent months to shore up confidence. And then follow that through, bingo, China's harsh winters spell economic pain for Australia. The plunging iron ore price could leave a $3 billion hole in the federal budget. The price of iron ore, the key steelmaking ingredient, collapsed to its lowest level since 2022 this month, having plunged more than 30%. And the impact of China's economic slowdown is not just being felt in commodities markets. Shares in A2 Milk, one of the largest suppliers of infant milk formula to China, plunged by more than 80% on Monday. And I think that's the point, really, that we've got to have a little bit of a broader view here with regard to what's going on in China. But there's a direct economic impact on Australia. And so now the risk in Australia is a recession is perhaps a little more likely than previously. And it's also worth noting that, of course, we had Jerome Powell coming in and saying, yes, we are going to cut rates. And everyone's in the market saying, whoopee. And of course, things went through the roof. But this article just re-emphasizes the fact, be careful what you wish for, because when rate cuts have come, markets tend to go down dramatically. And of course, if US markets go down, that's going to have an impact locally. It's all going to have an impact on the local bond market as well. So we are in a very, very uncertain environment. And everything that I'm seeing with regard to the local dialogue about what's going on is pretty weak, frankly. Although, if you're Mr. Bragg, Senator Bragg, of course, you can talk about yoga.
We all value yoga. We think that yoga is valuable. If you have a sore back or in general, it's good for your health. But right now, the country is in great need of people who can build houses. And yoga teachers are very virtuous people. But we need more builders than we need yoga teachers right now. And the reason we haven't had any more builders or tradespeople is because the CFMEU told the government, no, we don't want people who won't be members of our union, so don't let them in the country. Instead, we've got all these yoga teachers. Very good people, but right now, the need for us as a country that is going backwards on housing construction is people who can build houses. Because 8 years ago, we were building 230,000 houses. And this year, we're building 160,000 houses with a massive influx over 1 million people since the election.
Well, there you have it, Martin. There's something that that we've been discussing for a while. Look, I'm absolutely joyful the fact that the fact that Christopher Joy is been watching our shows, because he's a little bit late to the party, to the information that we've been giving our followers and viewers for a while now. And the senators are also starting to speak the truths that we've been talking about. Now, let's not forget these changes happened over a year ago. With regards to the PR pathways that you and I broke the news, years ago, we broke the news as to the changes that were brought about, and how that was going to impact the pathways. Now let's not forget. I mean, he's talking about yoga instructors, yoga masters, and that's pretty much the quickest pathway to PR here in Australia, which is your medical pathway. I'm surprised that he didn't bring up my favorite, which was masseuse, and particularly the ones that come with a happy ending at the end as well. And that, I'm not joking, Martin. This is you've got pole dancers and everything else as well. So this is the reality. Right. This is what we've been lumped with. This is what we're getting. They talk about it on the center stage of Parliament House, in the debates and discussion. But what are they doing about it? What are they actually doing about it, Martin? Why are they not supporting, backing, reinstating the vigor and the position that TAFE, New South Wales had? I mean, all these private colleges that teach you how to break dance, and give you other degrees and certificates on knitting and crocheting. Well, that's not really going to build a nation, right? And there's only two ways that we can build this nation, and that builds a nation or the economic well-being of the future, and that's productivity or immigration. It's one of the two. So it's a sure thing. We know what both sides of the vulture, the left and the right, have chosen, and that's really immigration, because there is no productivity, Martin. There is no productivity, and that is totally productivity is really what was announced today about the Labor's right to disconnect laws from that are coming into effect today. I mean, this is stuff that's just got, in my view, in my short read up on what's going to happen. It's incredible. Well, the what we're really, my summary today after reading some of these articles with regards to this right to disconnect laws, my summary is really, it's all geared and centered around big business, right? Because they can get away with it. They can afford this sort of these sort of regulations and legislation, but small business can't. The small business operator can't. The small business operator that has a team of two, or has a team of three, or five for that matter, or even 10, that they won't be able to. And all that's done is empowered some of the underlings to voice something and to make complaints. And it's horrendous when you get taken to through these regulatory bodies. Through to when people make complaints. But I think the person that best, one of the best comments I saw was Jake's comment on his Twitter post there. And talks about he's got a team of carpenters, and if they decide to not to do a job in the western suburbs, but they change post to the north, North Sydney, but that decision was made after after knockoff on a Friday, and because he's unable to contact his team, basically they're all going to go to the western suburbs when the job's over in North. So he spells it all out. But I like the last bit, and says the Australian Labor Party will never learn about business because they have never run a business and have no grasp of productivity. As I said earlier on, there's two ways that we build an economy, and that is productivity or immigration, right? So we know, and this doesn't, and I'm not having a go at the labs because the libs are pretty much, they're just the right wing of the same vulture, as I keep on saying, and I don't think things would have been any different. And this is where we are now. This is where we stand with China. So we're basically now going to remember what the WeChat Charter has said. The WeChat Charter has said that we're basically, because we're not manufacturing anything, we're not, in order to support or build the economy, what was the Labor government going to be doing? It was going to be opening the doors wider for the cheap imports from overseas, and we're going to be inundated by cheap household goods. I'm already seeing a lot of BYDs, the Chinese electric cars, which I wouldn't step inside one of them even if you gave me $1 million. That's how dangerous they consider it over in China, and yet we're importing this cheap crap over here. Let alone all the cheap materials that are now coming over. So we're beholden to China in more ways than a lot of people think. And this is the consequence of the policies that have been run by both sides of the fence. And here we are. But we know where they stand, and that is full throttle on immigration. And you can whistle Dixie on construction.
Absolutely. And it is amazing when you actually think about what's going on. all of the levers that should be being pulled aren't being pulled, and a whole bunch of other ones are being pulled. And you mentioned earlier on about the committees and the fact that committees are rife. Well, there was a very interesting article which is directly relevant, I think, at this point, which talked a little bit about the New South Wales fair trading results. And this slide really shocked me. So there was just one penalty notice handed out this year, despite hundreds of tenant complaints. That's the, I think there were two other warning letters. And the point there is that they're not doing their job. This is another committee and another process and another unproductive set of activities. Which we seem so good at as a country, but we're not actually tackling the critical issues that need to be tackled. You wonder where it's all going to run. And I guess looking at it from the WeChat chat perspective, how are they looking at it? There's trouble in China. Australia looks like a bit of a an interesting opportunity for many of them. So it looks to me as though they're still reaffirming. There's still opportunity.
Look, and this is it. This is what they're persistent about. They're obviously just the commentary over the weekend was around the fact that it's only now that the mainstream media are picking up on a lot of the movement that you and I've been talking about for months now, with regards to the geopolitical events in around your neck of the woods. Where there's all the rioting and everything that's going on, and even your head honcho there is going to be housing refugees in first cab off the rank, and your the local Englishman can whistle Dixie. But this is creating a lot of conflict. They're talking about the conflict in England. They're talking about the conflict in some European countries. They're talking about the conflict that's going to be created potentially, and we're already seeing over in America with regards to the Democrats and the Republicans. So what they're saying, so it's nothing new that we've haven't discussed before, how then Australia becomes a safe haven. But what they were saying over the weekend was that the people that are going to be coming over more so in numbers, it's not so much the Americans, US citizens as such. It's not the Englishman or people as such or Germans or as such, but it's the people that migrated to these countries in previous years now that that thought that was a better choice. And we're talking about people from Hong Kong, because obviously the WeChat charities are based on the Asian community. We talk about people from Hong Kong, Malaysia, mainland China. And they're very well off. These are people that, don't forget, that left these parts of the world to go to England, to go to America, to go to Canada, to go to Europe. As opposed to coming to Australia initially, but now it's all coming back. They're saying that it's all pointing back once again to Australia, because Australia is a favorable nation, relatively safe in comparison to other nations, and we're still somewhat distant from all the upheaval that's been created over in the Middle East, Europe, everywhere else. So this is where people have got to be very watchful and conscious of, and this is where they in the chat was rather interesting. I sort of had to ask Dusty and Evan if they made any mention to our references, but the reference that I'm going talking about is when we reference, where would they go? Where would these people, expats coming back from Europe, people that are looking for safety? The nature and the demographics, Martin, is not one that's going to be taking them to the Blacktown LGA. It's not one that's going to be taking them to the southwest region of Sydney. It's not, it's they're predominantly your North Shores, your eastern suburbs, and your God's country, the Shire. So, and this is where they're talking about it. And if the WeChat chatterers are talking about, strongly, you can bet your bottom dollar that they're going to be focusing on some of looking at parking some of their money as well in these parts and in these regions, because of what they can see that potentially is going to be coming in greater numbers in the near future. I mean, the US election is just around the corner, and I don't think Europe's going to get any better anytime soon. So they're looking for all these pathways to come over, and as you and I know, and our followers and our viewers know, it's a lot easier to bring money over from America to from England and other European countries. So the money will travel first. Purchases will be made, and there are, as we've talked about before, there's six ways to Sunday where people can, without even obtaining PR, can purchase homes because they can, because of the wealth that they're carrying and the amount of money that they're carrying. So we won't go into detail because we've spoken about on previous shows about how to do that. So this is why Dusty's predicting. In the section of Dusty's prediction, this is why she's predicting a further rise of 5 to 10% in Sydney, Martin, regardless of what some of the other pundits are saying. So, she follows the WeChat chatterers very, very closely. So, look, it's not a laughing matter as such, but the heat's still on, and based on the numbers that we've got on market. It's relative to the demand. It's not enough to quench as I've been saying for a long time, it's not enough to quench the dragon.
Yes, I think this is again very important. But you did make the point, and I want to underscore it once again, that not all suburbs are equally attractive to some of those people coming into the country. Many of those people who come in have quite a large amount of cash available and are able to transact relatively quickly, and we're certainly seeing it in some of our one-to-one conversations. So in some areas of Sydney, prices are still very strong, in others not. But I just can't resist going back to the other point that you made about what's happening on the UK, right? This is a remarkable little comment here. UK government prepares to deploy asylum seekers across the country. Immigrants will be given priority over Britons when it comes to finding housing. Now, that's not the complete story. But it is actually a very important part of the story, because essentially what they're doing now is, rather than just parking migrants who've come in through nefarious means, particularly taking you know, the boat trip from France, the previous government just sort of parked them, and they were hoping in due course to kick them out of the country, whereas now this government is essentially deciding that they're actually not going to do that. They're going to actually process them, and some of them will probably be allowed to stay. So that's putting more demand on property. And of course, property prices are still very strong in the UK even now. But interestingly, this government, this is the government who was elected with one third of the votes, but got two thirds of the seats, in recent times decided that they were no longer going to provide support for pensioners through the winter in terms of the fuel costs, which are still very high, and then announced this last week that electricity prices and gas prices in aggregate were going up about 10% from October, 10% up. So I'm afraid that this is another example of what politicians say they're going to do versus what they actually do. And once again, they're ploughing their own furrow for their own interests, despite the interests of ordinary people being frankly thrown to the wall. And I'm afraid this is another classic example that we're seeing around the world. We see it in Australia, we see it in the UK, we see it elsewhere as well, and probably we'll see it in the US once the election is through there. So we are in a very, very precarious situation. And I come back to the point that you made a little earlier on, that it seems to me that the people in charge deliberately don't want to actually understand what ordinary people's lives are like and what those pressures are like. And, you know, they make these highfalutin statements and all these promises, but when the real, you know, rubber hits the road, as it were, you can see that they're not actually really supporting ordinary people and ordinary businesses. And that's a problem on both sides of politics. It's a problem in the UK, it's a problem in Australia. And it comes then back to, well, who are they supporting? And actually what they are supporting is predominantly big businesses in Australia, of course. The construction sector are still reaching for more help. If we're going to build more stuff, we need more government help. Migration is still the lever of choice in terms of actually creating momentum in the economy, despite the fact that everything is looking a little bit sick. But never mind, because now we know that there's been an agreement reached, and now the Liberal and Labour Party have agreed that the RBA, well, they're going to keep the emergency override decision for government to overturn an RBA decision. And the entire existing RBA board is going to move to the new interest rate setting board. There's going to be legislation to go to Parliament for the end of the year. So that's going to solve everything, isn't it, Edwin? That's going to mean that everything is magically going to now go right.
Yeah, that's it. It's the uni party, right? That's the solution. I mean, on that note, folks, thanks for watching Monday Night Rant, because the bottom line is, we're stuffed, we're screwed. Look, but is it any wonder, man? we've been saying this for how long now? For the last few weeks, we've been saying, watch this space, because it's also in my opinion, it's also the pressure that the Labor government's getting from the Greens. I said before, and I'll say it again, that in my opinion, that's my personal opinion, that the Greens have got the thumb on the scale when it comes to, they want rates to come down. They don't understand what's going to happen. They don't understand that without the supply side of things and not putting a halt to the demand side of things by way of immigration and other government policies, and really kickstarting and cranking up construction, that's just going to fuel the price of housing. It's going to take it to another level that we haven't seen. But that's where we're at. That's what I said 3, 4, 5 weeks ago. We've talked about it, and we've sort of skimmed the surface of saying that the RBA is not really independent, But now this is going to be basically it's pretty much going to be etched in stone now. This is it. This is where the there is no independency. There's no if I don't like your decision, I'll just reverse it, and that's it. So be it. There was some fake and whistle Dixie, but there's another report that came out. MPs. $405 million property empire exposed. I mean, this is just a slap in the face for what they're trying to do to the everyday person, everyday Joe, to that's trying to get on the ladder. And it's not even as much as trying to get on the property ladder, but it's also just to have a rental property with some sort of comfort, some sort of enjoyment, some sort of security for the next few years, whilst they get the life in order and get the life piece of life together so that they can get ahead and go to the next level if they so wish to. But we don't have any of that. So all we've got is the politicians investing more into real estate. And there was another piece that George from ITC put up on Twitter, and that was that John Minns has just been pretty much taken over the Coles, because he's got my understanding of that article and the conversation with George was that between him and his family, proprietary interests or interests in a real estate, an independent real estate office. So this is the commissioner for better regulations in strata in residential property has just been turfed because lo and behold, he's there's something like they've got something like hundreds of thousands of dollars, $750,000 or so or thereabouts, vested interest in a real estate company. And this is so it was it any wonder why George and I couldn't make heads or tails as to why he didn't want to listen to some of the potential policy changes that could be implemented straight away. But now we know it's because implementing the changes that we were suggesting would mean that his vested interest, him and his family's vested interest in the real estate company would diminish somewhat because that's yeah so it wasn't beneficial to his to his needs. So this is the position that we find and we face, and as you said, Martin, and it's something that it's not just happening here in Australia. It's happening all over the world with all governments that seem to be in control and seem to have that love for property and love for wealth.
Well, it's a simple solution, you see, and unfortunately, it's not necessarily an effective solution. But of course, there is always some good news amidst all the doom and gloom. CBA announced that they're actually going to cut their interest rates for new borrowers by a massive 0.25 percentage point to 6.89% if they have a 20% deposit. And for those with a bigger deposit, loan prices will fall by 0.2 of a percentage point. Now, there's a very interesting commentary here, which people didn't notice when they actually picked this up. The first part, of course, is that what we've seen is a significant reduction in term deposit rates recently. So banks are trying to make more capacity to be able to actually compete into the spring selling season. But the other point in this article, which is really interesting, was that the CBA has tended to have more expensive mortgage rates. And in fact, the commentary here was that the CBA priced home loans at a premium before the cuts, and they were also one of the most active in providing customers with below-the-line discounts. In other words, the rate that's posted is not the rate you can negotiate. But interestingly, they did say that ANZ home loans are constantly under review and our rates remain competitive. An ANZ spokesperson said, and in fact, some of the people that I speak with suggest that ANZ has been a little bit more competitive. And yet, notice this, APRA has now slapped ANZ with a tougher capital charge because of their shenanigans with the escalating bond trading scandal. So they're going to have to carry $750 million in idle capital that cannot be returned for lending or shareholder returns. So it's quite interesting just seeing what's going on. Now, my point in all of this, Edwin, is that, you know, this slight move in interest rates, which was really amped up by a lot of the property people that I spoke with, said, see, rates are coming down, you know, get into the market and buy now. They're not understanding what's really going on here. This is not a dramatic change and dramatic move. And like I say, people on the deposit side of the equation are actually paying for it, really. But it does show you once again how the mainstream are spinning a story that is only really half the story. And you need to come to somewhere like ourselves to be able to actually get the full story of what's really going on. Unfortunately, the full story, when you look at it, is, well, it's not particularly attractive, is it?
No, it's not. And this is, and that's a thing that we've been talking about for a very long time. Then you start breaking it down, and look, when you start breaking it down, then you start dissecting it all up, and you get a better understanding. And we, you know, we've also been somewhat fortunate that we've linked up with, you know, the WeChat chatterers and other groups that are able to keep us abreast and keep us ahead of the curve when particularly for our clients, on my side of the fence, in terms of the wanting to buy and a lot of first time buyers that are wanting to enter the market, we've been able to navigate through some of these things that aren't really shared on mainstream media. And we're able to, you know, help them in better ways than what we would have years ago. So, look, it's something that, yeah, what we share is a benefit to our followers and our viewers. And I think, look, one of the things that we have been documenting on a weekly basis is the numbers on market. And, yeah, spring seems to come early in terms of the weather patterns. So, you know, the numbers are rising, although be careful as to what area as well, as you said, and what type of property. We've got a big rise in numbers in terms of apartments, as well as the blocks of land, but in freestanding homes, they seem to be pretty much tracking on par with last year. So, you know, and then again, obviously, we don't break it down into suburbs. We just look at the Sydney region according to domain in Globo. But it's still rising, nevertheless. And there are some pockets of Sydney. There are some parts of Sydney that the agents that we talk to have had noticeably stronger calls for what we call the CMA. Which then converts into a property going on the market. It's, you know, a comparative market analysis that agents get called in to give the owners an opinion or a view as to what that they could potentially get for the property. So they've had more calls for CMAs across some parts of Sydney. So some areas are going to be looking healthy, but others are still very much, very dry, very little by way of choice, and it's driving those markets. So you just got to be careful.
Spot on. Absolutely right. And of course, a lot of properties that are coming on the market are ex-investment properties, need a lot of work, etc. But let's just look at the numbers in a bit more detail. So last week on the 19th of August, there were 17,670 properties listed for sale. This is using the domain definition of the Sydney region. And it's interesting to note, as you say, that the house, apartment and townhouse numbers are shown there. And then if we jump forward, it's now 18,099, and it's gone up. But as you again say, if you look at the land and if you look at some of the apartments, they're going up. Houses are pretty much static. And in fact, if you look at the chart, you can see that we're tracking ahead of last year by, you know, a reasonable margin. But as we often say, Edwin, whilst it's slightly better than last year, the absolute number of listings is still relatively low. And very importantly, the quality of the listings, in other words, what are the properties coming on? Are they actually really attractive or not? The quality of those listings in many areas look pretty dodgy to me.
Yeah, and this is where it pays to be careful and be cautious when approaching. We've shared it doesn't take much to do a or the WeChat chatters call a showroom renovation, and which fools a lot of people, and the agents use that as a tool, as a means to obtain more for the property. And unfortunately for the ones that fall for it, and they pay more than what they should have for something that may that's that let's say was livable, because they think that it's being renovated properly, and then it ends up costing them a lot more to undo all those renovations and do it again, because so they've paid more on the initial purchase. Thinking that it's fully renovated, added to that is the extra emotion payment, the extra 5 to 10% tab for emotion, and then there's your 5% for rectification. So later on, because it all falls to pieces, and you find out that things weren't done properly as they should have been. So that's the unfortunate thing, Martin. But as we say, our followers and our viewers know better.
Spot on, they do, absolutely. And let's look at the Melbourne situation, which is quite interesting because on the 19th of August, there were 27,642 properties in the Melbourne region as defined by Domain, and houses were at 14,227. Keep that number in mind, jump forward a week. And you can see there that on the 26th of August, the numbers jumped up to 28,098, and the houses were 14,570. So once again, we are seeing some significant increases in houses, other things too, which is quite interesting. Now, if you go back to Melbourne last year on the 21st of August, it was 23,282. So let's just put that in the context. So I think this is really, really important context, right? So 28 compared with 23. What's wrong with this picture, Edwin?
Yeah, well, if you look at this, you look at the apartments for sale in Melbourne over the last 2 weeks haven't varied a great deal. And in terms of your houses, so apartments from sale from 2023, same around about the same week last year to now, there's a difference of about 1,000 apartments on market. But in terms of houses, there's over 3,000 more freestanding homes on market in Melbourne than they had last year. But then again, it's because of all these taxes, all these the investors wanting to get out, and as I say, it's a different market. It's a different market altogether, and it's one of those markets that the WeChat chatterers, the silent tigers, are don't really want to don't really want to visit anytime soon, but because of the many, in their opinion, as what they say, the many obstacles that the government's put in place, not only the taxes but also the reforms to the Residential Tenancies Act down there with regards to minimum standards, which is not a bad thing, not a bad thing at all. But the way they've implemented, the way they've put it in place, it's just created too much upheaval there. And on top of that, my call from earlier on was that once this land tax really starts biting into the small manufacturing companies, and when I talk about small, I'm talking about the SMEs that may be operating small industrial complexes, they'll just they'll they're already looking, and New South Wales becomes very, very attractive to for them to back up stumps and or and basically come over to New South Wales and reposition themselves in the outskirts of Sydney, where industrial land and these warehouses and facilities that they require are relatively cheap. More to the point, investors are can bring in these people, because the overheads aren't as costly as what they are. What they are because governments think that holders of the land, holders of the of these properties, owners of the land and these properties, landlords, they think that they're not going to pass on those taxes or those added outgoings to the tenants. I mean, they really don't know. They really don't know what they're doing. So yeah, we're going to get that rise, and with that comes also in the appetite for residential property, which once again we're not really building. Particularly out west, we're not really building as fervently as we should be, and they're not going to be wanting to look in, move into apartment blocks in Penrith or in or in parts of the St. Mary's or the like. They want to they want big blocks of land with big homes on with the again the, where they the family can enjoy the lifestyle. So this is the dynamics that we're seeing, and we'll see more of it in coming months and early to mid next year, Martin, where because it's a get out of Melbourne episode.
Well, I refer back to Christopher George's article once again. He did make the point. We've been talking about it for at least a year, and he's finally picked it up. So that's quite interesting. Let's look at Brisbane briefly. So the numbers in Brisbane, 3,572 properties for sale in the Brisbane region, according to Domain, on the 19th of August. Jump forward, 3,725. So it's another rise, and still quite low and still quite high demand. And just looking at the auctions, the auction numbers were, well, relatively strong. And in fact, the expectation is slightly more coming to auction next week. Although, as we discussed earlier, I think some of the clearance rates are probably a bit dodgy. I have to say, Edwin, I'm still getting reports in my conversations on a one-on-one basis how agents are pushing people towards going to auction, And I keep coming back to this wonderful point. If you actually take a property to auction, the agent can charge you more, quite a lot more, for the marketing campaign and for the auction, et cetera, et cetera. So they make money on you, whether in fact you sell or not, and whether you actually get a good price at auction or not. And my perspective has always been that this is actually a bit of a wicked thing to do, but agents are still doing it.
It's unless you've unless you're standing, unless you know what they're what they're doing, and unless you're standing with somebody that knows alongside of you, it's that will take you for a they will take you for a ride. That's the nature of that game, unfortunately. And the way we choose agents on behalf of our clients when we do a consultation or when they appoint us as the consultants. To manage the sale process for them or work alongside of them is it's totally different to what your normal person does because they listen to what the selling agent wants them to do as opposed to us dictating what we want them to do in order for them to earn their the money. At the end of the day, it comes back down to when you break it down in simple terms, it comes back down to selling agents earning $1,436 per hour on average across the Sydney region for the sale of a home, and on average they're spending 17 hours from the beginning of the campaign to the end sale, and obviously a lot spending a lot less. In that, and so you just do the math as to what you're paying a selling agent and one that forces you for a quick sale without any consultation and or any because they can, because they do, and because that's the way they hoodwink the clients into moving forward. And most unfortunately, not all, but most just ain't they care more about their back pocket, because first and foremost is their commission, then the vendor. The loyalty is to the back pocket, not to the vendor.
Spot on. Unfortunately, that's the way that the market tends to. Although there are some agents that are not all the same, there are some good ones, but unfortunately, you need to understand which are the good ones and which aren't. And sometimes it's quite hard to peel back the onion and find out whether they've got a good heart or whether they are, as you say, interested in their wallet and the back pocket. Let's just briefly look at the rentals in Sydney. On the 19th, we had 12,554. Week later, 12,325. In Melbourne, on the 19th, 10,815, and 10,757 the week later. So we're seeing a little bit of a fall in terms of property available to let. And my theory has always been, Edwin, that some of those are to do with the fact that some of the investment properties are now actually being sold and therefore are not available to be let. And that's part of the problem. And of course, we're also having a little bit of a time here as the spring begins to move and we start to see the next year of students maybe coming back into the country. Those that will actually change the dynamics a bit. But unfortunately, the rents are still rising. And whilst everyone's claiming that the growth is easing, certainly, in my conversations with people, they're still having to pay a lot more if they want to get anywhere. And the quality of what they're actually being offered is still relatively low. So we're seeing a lot of properties coming into the rental market with damp problems and other issues. So you have to be really careful. Even if you're actually in the rental sector, it's important to kick the tires on the property too.
100%, and you also kick the shins of the agents that you want to use as well, just to test them out. Just going back a step, Martin, with that, yeah. Look, I want to re-emphasize, not all agents are bad agents, but unfortunately, the game is one that the saying goes, there are agents that we buy property from. Because we can pressure them into selling earlier. We can pressure them into, I mean, that's us in terms of our office. We can, we've got our ways to get in and get property at a obviously at a price point that's favorable to our client if we're buying. And if we're assisting the client to sell a property and we're managing the process alongside them in so they can obtain a better result at the end. Well, there are agents that we know that we will sell through because they will listen to the needs of our clients. They will listen to the way that we want it handled or staged or prepared the whole campaign. And more to the point, because they're willing to open up their calendar. In particular, where there's a lot of traffic, where there is a lot of, I mean, Saturday is peak hour from 8 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There are more cars, more vehicles on the road than any other day, Martin. And this is where we make sure that. Yeah, there are agents that are, and not only for our clients, but we also see that they also take the same approach outside of our clients. Yeah, we can see, and hence the reason why we will interview them to see if they would suit to be the agent of choice for our clients as well, because of the way that we can see that they handle. The whole negotiation process and the whole campaign. So yeah, just want to make sure that so as that I don't get stoned or beaten up by the selling agents as I'm attending the open house inspection.
No, good point. And like, we have said, and we continue to say, there are some good agents out there. There are also some you need to be careful of, and you need to ask the right questions on the way through. So hopefully people who have been following these shows will know those sorts of questions. We've touched on it before. Just before we come to the end of the show, we've got a really important this is a health warning, Edwin, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I've always said, if I'm going to be taken out, if I'm going to be taken out, run over by a car, I definitely don't want it to be a Tesla. And if it is a Tesla, at least I want to wait until a Cybertruck comes along or something, because you want to be taken out by something a bit classier than a BYD or a small Tesla electric car. So we've been doing some work with a client over in the eastern suburbs, helping him prepare his property for sale. And I'll tell you what, over the weeks that we've been attending the property and working with the trades and the agent that's got carriage of the sale there, our client unfortunately lives in a very highly trafficked, not so much highly trafficked, but they seem to use the road that he lives in as a bloody speedway. And there are two blind spots when you're trying to cross the road because of the parked cars on the side of the road. So I've almost been collected a couple of times by a BYD, a bloody Chinese import electric car, and a white Tesla, a small white Tesla. And it's you can't hear them, you can't hear them. And when you see them, look, my being Latin American, my matador skills came into play, because I had to literally get away from the car before he charged me and bowled me over. So yeah, look, it's saying all that in jest. Just be careful, because the more I've noticed a lot more electric vehicles out there, and with these cheap BYDs, they're cheap imports. You just can't hear the bloody things. Be warned, stay alert, and look both ways, and then look again before you take the first step.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got quite a few electric vehicles in and around the UK, because it's been quite a big program here. And it is interesting to note that the only way you hear them coming is because of the bad state of the roads. So you hear them going over the potholes, right? So that's a tick for potholes, because at least you can perhaps see. But also the fact that some of the makes have an artificial sound that they actually play as they go along, so you actually can hear something. Others don't. And frankly, the ones who don't, you can't see them coming unless you actually, look right at them. If you're looking the other way and you only hear them, then you've got a little chance of getting out the way. So your matador skills clearly become ever more important, Edwin. So maybe that's another line of business for you. How do you actually go around electric vehicles? But folks, no, seriously, be careful with the road crossings, and also with kids. I saw a couple of kids the other day, actually just up the road here, who didn't bother to look because they didn't hear anything coming, and were nearly collected by that was a Tesla, actually. And it is quite a serious issue, and I suspect that as the vehicles get rolled out and more of the petrol ones and diesel ones are replaced, this is going to be a big and significant issue. So thanks for bringing that up, Edwin. Very important point.
No worries. And hopefully we'll see each other again next Monday, Martin. The days seem to be going a lot quicker now. Maybe with daylight saving coming up, we might get a and things warming up, we'll be able to catch up a little bit earlier.
Well, I look forward to that, Edwin, and it'll be, as always, an interesting conversation. More uncertainty, more surprises, more interesting stories from the world of property and finance, and always appreciate our Monday rants. Thanks, Edwin. We'll see you next week.
All the best.
Take care.